You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Inmates at Michigan's correctional facilities fear for their health and safety as more and more people inside prison walls test positive for the coronavirus. Many have died. Efren Paredes Jr. is one of those inmates. He's a longtime advocate for prison reform. Sentenced to life in prison when he was a teenager, his case was being reconsidered this year because of a Supreme Court ruling that states sentencing minors to life in prison without a chance of parole is unconstitutional. But the process has slowed down considerably as the courts and Lakeland Correctional Facility itself have gone into lockdown because of COVID-19. More than half of Lakeland's inmates have tested positive for the virus. Before we start this interview, we should mention Lakeland includes two different rescue dog training programs. So if you hear some barking, that's who's doing it. Efren Paredes, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there and I'm doing the best that I can, you know, given everything that's going on here at the facility.
All the prisoners at Lakeland, including yourself, have now been tested for COVID-19. I mean, that just happened last week. We've been hearing that more than 50% of Lakeland's population has tested positive. Have you been able to get your results yet?
Yes, I have. As of this morning, 9:30, the last time that I had someone check the numbers, 785 cases out of 1,400 have tested positive here at Lakeland, which is 57%.
Wow.
We represent 58% of all the infections statewide in every Michigan prison. I received the results of my tests on Friday, and I was one of the fortunate ones to have tested negative.
We're glad to hear it. How would you say the physical distance that you maintain on a daily basis is in terms of just where guys spend their days? Is it possible to get away from others physically?
The only time that people can really get away from others is when they go outdoors. Inside of the housing units and inside any building for that matter, whether it's an educational building or recreation room or any other building, people are always close to one another. In those buildings, most of the time, people are, shoulder to shoulder. You know, they're having to get out of each other's way, you know, to get down hallways. Or there's people, multiple people using the bathroom area at one time because it's a community bathroom, you know, for 80 people. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult, which is one of the major contributions to why so many people have contracted COVID-19 at this prison.
Is it necessarily obvious how many people are sick right now?
Well, the way that they have, what they've done is they've started to separate people into housing units that have been designated specifically for people who have tested positive, and there are some housing units designated for the ones that have tested negative. The problem with that is that there's been that process has been a bungled process. There have been people that were sent to the positive housing unit when they were negative. And just today, you know, we learned that one of the people that had been living in our housing unit, the negative housing unit, had been positive since last week, and he was still in the housing unit.
Do you feel like the people who are visibly showing symptoms are being moved out of the general population in a timely way?
Now, people are. For 4 weeks, people complained of symptoms. And if they didn't have a fever, they were just sent back to the housing unit. And if they were infected, you know, that would have allowed propagation of the disease. So for weeks, it wasn't until the tests were administered last week, the robust testing, that they were able to get a grip on what was actually going on. So before then, they were pretty much flying blind, trying to get, you know, mitigate and contain this pandemic here.
Yeah. Efren, can you tell us a little bit about how meals work at Lakeland? I mean, generally meals are served cafeteria style. Has that continued through as people have started getting sick?
For weeks, I and others on the outside have been advocating for the cafeteria to be closed. We were being fed in crowded dining area where about 150 people were eating at a time, four people at three-foot tables, square tables. So it was impossible to practice social distancing. that greatly contributed to the spread of the virus. And it wasn't until 200 people contracted COVID-19 and 9 people died here that the facility finally stopped feeding people in the dining hall and began delivering packaged meals to the housing units. Because people were deathly afraid of going to eat in the dining hall every day when they knew that people who worked in the dining hall had tested positive for COVID-19, that food service supervisors had tested positive, and the virus was thriving inside that space. 1,300 people were filing into and out of that space 3 times a day, and we knew it was dangerous to eat in there. So people have felt a sense of relief of not having being forced to go back over there and eat during this crisis. The thing is going to be what happens, you know, weeks from now when things start to calm down, because, you know, the virus is going to return again. You know, the scientists are saying it's going to return in the fall, and it's probably going to be even deadlier than it is right now. That's a deep concern, you know, moving forward.
All inmates at the prison have been tested for COVID-19. More than half have tested positive for the virus. Efren's results came back negative. You know, I was just going to ask, there's so many inmates who've been sick. Do you know anyone who was very sick suffering from COVID-19?
I do. I know a lot of people. You know, it was heartbreaking to see so many people. That was one of the things that really bothered me is Friday when I received my test results, just to see how many other people were being tested, you know, given and told that they were positive. I've known some people that we've grown up in prison together. You know, I've been here for 31 years. I've been incarcerated since I was 15 years old. And there's other people that have been incarcerated, you know, as long as me, who are juvenile lifers, people who are sentenced to life without parole when they were kids. And some of those people have tested positive.
Is it pretty common knowledge when someone dies? Is that information released to the rest of the population?
It is released, but it's not being released right away, maybe within a couple of days. But they don't tell us who the names of the people are. Usually we hear it, you know, through staff members or people who were in contact with family members of the person who may have died.
That sounds very hard.
It is extremely hard because, you know, there are people that have been here for decades, you know, waiting for an opportunity to become a productive citizen again and go back out into the community. And then, you know, there was a gentleman who was a juvenile lifer, you know. He died a couple weeks ago just waiting to go home. He was going to go home next month. He served 43 years and then died while waiting to go home.
Do you know anyone who has, I mean, obviously the virus is having just a catastrophic effect in some communities across Michigan. Do you know anyone who's lost someone on the outside?
We know several people. You know, one of the things about the prison system is that there's a large population from Wayne County, you know, people that lived in Detroit. So a lot of their family members, you know, a lot of people have had family members who have succumbed to the virus.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking today with Efren Paredes, Jr. He's an inmate at Lakeland Correctional Facility. Your case was subject to review this year. As you mentioned, you were sentenced to life in prison as a juvenile. And there's a lot of information online at your website about the case and the arguments that advocates have put forward on your behalf. And there were a lot of people who had hoped that this was going to be the year for you. What's the situation with your appeal as of today?
So in 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court made a ruling that stating that mandatory life without parole sentences are unconstitutional for juvenile offenders. So we've been waiting for 8 years to get a ruling. There were 363 people here in Michigan who were impacted by that ruling. 170 of them have been resentenced, and 190 of us are still waiting. I should have been back to court long before now. The, you know, prosecutors across the state have just been continually delaying the process. And recently, I became part of a class action lawsuit against the state of Michigan in February, calling on the federal court, asking them to expedite this process because it's gone on so long. So if that goes well, hopefully I can be resentenced sometime this summer or maybe in the fall. But that's, it's been a grueling, agonizing process, waiting 8 years to be resentenced and to be sitting in prison without a sentence.
We know that an awful lot of Michigan's court functions have been brought to a halt. And are you hearing anything about when those will be restarted?
No. I think everything is kind of day to day. It's a very fluid situation. We don't know, what's happening. We hear about, the government opening up, different sectors at a time, the last I heard that there was, a couple people who had tested positive working in the federal White House. I mean, working in the federal court for the Eastern District of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had suspended hearings there for, some time.
You've spent a lot of time working on a petition campaign for prison reform. And this is a time in Michigan when the state has decided to release a limited number of people early because of the outbreak. Some federal inmates have been eligible for an early parole or an early release. It feels like it has the possibility for a moment of reckoning about who absolutely does need to be incarcerated because they present a danger to society and who does not. Do you think that this might be a moment when people will think about how our prisons fit or don't fit with society's goals for justice?
I certainly hope it does. We drafted that 10-point platform. That was before the COVID crisis even began. We added in a clause in there regarding the COVID crisis once it started. What this has exposed, I think, COVID-19 is how dangerous prisons are to public safety. They're a public health risk. They're a human rights catastrophe. We have things like COVID-19 ravaging the prisons, and there's nothing that can be done to social distance, allow people to social distance. And so, moving forward, we need to think about what it is we're looking at when it comes to punishment. Because one of the things that's been proven through studies is that long-term incarceration does not deter crime. So, there's a lot of people that could be released that are in prison right now. We could do some better with sentencing, reforming sentencing guidelines. We could do something with ending mandatory minimums. People are serving way too much time. Right now, Michigan people are incarcerated longer than any other state in the country.
At the same time, you've pointed out in your writing there's these big discrepancies between how Michigan spends a lot of money on prisons, even as crime from a generational standpoint has been decreasing. At the same time, it's been really tough to get political will to make these changes. What do you think is essential to changing people's minds and people's math about what role prisons serve and what they do?
Education. A lot of education and activism. A lot of people have been looking at prison in terms of, through the lens of, get tough on crime and, allowing politicians to instill fear in the public while the numbers have gone down. Juvenile crime specifically has gone down for like 15 to 20 years. And the only thing that's increased when it comes to crime is the coverage of crime through the lens of the media. And so when people begin to understand that, look, we have people in here that are serving a long sentences. We look at, for instance, people who are serving life without parole sentences. The recidivism rate for those people is less than 1%. Recidivism rate for people serving parolable life sentences is less than 2%. Yet these are the populations that we continue to keep incarcerated for as long as possible. And that just doesn't make any sense. We have to do better. We have to look at how the rest of the world is able to solve this problem without using incarceration as their main instrument of social control.
You know, I don't mean to sound cynical, but as the state's revenues have been plunging during the outbreak, I can't help but wonder if finances might even drive some of this for the state.
Well, I certainly believe that when people have a choice between keeping people incarcerated just because they're angry at them and sacrificing all the things that that means with the budget, the way that this crisis is cratering the budget. And what I mean by that is when they start looking at, you know, do I want food on my table? Do I want, you know, schools to stay open? Do I want first responders to get paid? Those things take precedence over making sure that we get the most time out of someone, you know, placed inside of a human cage. And we have to think about that. We have to think realistic about this. And we need to think sensibly and humanely.
I know you don't have much choice in your situation right now, but I was wondering how you feel like you're getting through this. What keeps you going?
My faith, you know, my belief in a higher power, my family, you know, knowing that I can communicate with them and knowing that they're safe and hanging in there, that they're doing well. That means the world, you know, to me. Hearing from friends and family has been an enormous help. Staying busy, you know, reading and writing, meditating, working on breathing exercises, and, you know, trying to stay as focused as, you know, as I can. Trying to think about the things that I do have control over and not try to focus on the things that I don't have control over during this difficult moment. But one thing that I did want to mention is that the people who have been tested positive for COVID-19 are not receiving therapeutic treatment. We were told before this crisis began that people who had contracted the disease would be given a regimen of vitamins, Theraflu, and Gatorade at a minimum. And the only thing that some of them have received is some vitamins, but the majority of them have not. And the other thing is that they're supposed to be getting visits by medical people from the healthcare services twice a day to check their oxygen saturation levels and their temperatures and to see how they're, you know, how they're doing. That's not happening. They're doing it like in some units, and some units they're not. Some units they'll go one day, some units they won't go any days at all. It is really, really a disaster when it comes to that.
For those who don't know, oxygen saturation levels can be an important indicator in COVID patients about whether they're crashing and might be in need of a hospitalization or a more intensive level of care. Well, Efren, thank you so much for talking with us, and we hope you're able to stay safe through all this and see your family soon.
Thank you.
One final note, we reached out to Michigan's Department of Corrections for some response to this interview. As of broadcast time, no one's been made available to talk with us.